Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. We are here today on this beautiful rainy afternoon, and we are about to chat with a dear friend of mine, a Jyotish astrologer. We're talking with Gowri today. How's it going, Gowri?
Oh, it's going great. How about with you?
It's going fabulous for me. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So my name is Gowri, and I've been chanting mantras since childhood. As a teenager, I had a mentor for mantra. And then after college, I went to live with my guru in India. I spent quite a few years living with her, doing service work and practices. There I met my mentor for the Jyotish astrology in India. And when I came back to the States, I started working by teaching at different yoga trainings, teaching mantra, Vedic philosophy, doing Vedic ceremonies called pujas, and then working one-on-one with clients to go through their Vedic or Jyotish astrology chart and determine specific mantras for them based off of their individual karma and their present time goals.
So that sounds like you're doing a lot of stuff here. So we're gonna break some of that down for the listening audience. And if anyone is driving in their cars, you know, we're gonna have a lot of time to flesh out some of these ideas of what Jyotish is, what mantra is, and all of that. So don't be intimidated by all this sort of advanced stuff that that Gowri is talking about, because we're going to break it down a little bit more. So let's just back it up a little bit. What is Vedic astrology or Jyotish astrology? How do you understand that?
So Jyotish means light of the divine or eyes of the universe. It's like getting a bird's eye perspective on your life as a whole, on your spiritual growth. And what it is it starts with these charts, and there's a main chart, and the main chart is a reflection of what was in your subtle body, in your subconscious mind, at the moment of your incarnation. So it's basically a map of what's going on in your subtle body and subconscious mind, and you can see what the karma is, what seeds have been planted from previous lives, and what's going to occur in people's lives. And some of those occurrences, you know, it's karma. It's like some are lying in water, some in sand, and some in concrete. So you can use practices to shift courses of events. You can look at the chart and understand, this is why things have happened. This is the trajectory I'm on now, and this is where I'm looking to go. And it's really, really empowering for people.
And so when you say, when you reference the chart, you're talking about people's birth chart or their natal chart, like from the moment that they're born out of the womb?
So that's a really good question. In the Jyotish version of astrology, things are different from what people typically think of in the Western astrology. There are over 100 different charts. There's a main chart, and then there are subdivisional charts that are blow-ups of portions of the main chart. So, for example, there's a specific partnership chart, a career chart, housing chart, parental chart, children's chart, health chart. It goes on and on and on. So it gets very specific, and it's based off of your consciousness. It's based off of the moon, which is the mind. In the Western, there's one chart, and it's based off of the sun, which is the soul. So here, we're looking much deeper and more specifically than what people typically think of as the Western chart. And you're actually looking at the forces inside of someone's mind and how they've been influenced. And then you can see in the charts what karmic seeds have been planted from previous lives. So people can go about their day-to-day reality, and then at different points in their life, it seems like their mind shifts, their emotion shifts, the course of their life shifts, maybe they're going through a transition. And using the charts, we can see why that's happening and what's going to come. And you can also predict, this is a good time to move, this is when a house will sell. So it is complicated because there are so many different ways that you can use these tools, and there's so much information that you can get.
Because it's essentially, like you said, it's this bird's eye view of your entire life, and then there's different areas and aspects that you can do a deeper dive into and expand and explore through the health or relationships or career, or like you said, kind of extensive from there.
Exactly. So typically when people want to take a look at their chart, I recommend for the first session that they pick three specific questions or areas. Mm. So some people want to know, is this the right career path for me, or I would like to do this? How is this going to look? How can I achieve that? What's going on in my relationship? When am I going to meet my soulmate?
Yeah.
This has been going on with my health. Why is this happening? And then we can see, and different situations are created for people for various reasons. So two people can have the same disease, but the reason that they have that disease may be different. So that's where it's important to look at which mantras and which practical steps need to be taken in order to correct the situation.
Absolutely. So jumping back just a moment, you said that on an initial reading, you encourage people to have three questions that they want to explore. What are things that people are generally most curious about?
Typically, people want to look at their practical reality. They want to look at their health. They want to look at their relationships, and they want to look at their work.
Yeah.
Other people also want to look backwards, or they want to look to the future. So sometimes people have gone through events in their life, or they have family dynamics, and they don't have clarity on why things are the way that they are.
Mm.
Or what's even more frustrating is they understand what's going on, but they don't know how to shift it.
Mm.
And then they also want to see if they're going to move, where to move, you know, when they're going to meet their partner, when is a good time to conceive a child. So it seems like a very esoteric practice, but it has very practical applications. And one reason they use it so much in India is because it's not enough to sit and do practices and cultivate a positive mind state. You need to also create harmonious circumstances in your day-to-day reality in order to have peace of mind.
So when you say creating harmonious circumstances, what does that look like? What is that?
So a lot of people go to a yoga class, or they go and they meditate, and they're going to put themselves in a good state of consciousness. But then maybe they leave that activity or that class, and maybe it's when they're driving home and somebody cuts them off, or they go back to their family life and there's been chronic patterns, or maybe it's just that they struggle with health concerns and they, you know, constantly lose energy from that, but there's no way to maintain the states of consciousness that they develop during their practices when they're having, say, survival programs problems or, you know, constantly fighting in relationships or stressing out over family holidays or whatever it is.
They just jump back into their regular lives again.
Exactly. And that's where we need to kind of manage the flow of what's happening in the day-to-day reality so that that state of consciousness can be continued. And on one hand, it's true that we need to cultivate a state of consciousness that goes beyond circumstances. But then on another hand, we do need to apply discrimination and discernment and consciously plant a beautiful garden and, you know, circumstances that are going to grow into our life.
I like that. I love that idea of the garden metaphor and, you know, planting things and also weeding things out and kind of cultivating a space, you know, a garden that we want in our of our lives.
Absolutely.
So I want to put Jyotish a little bit into a framework for people to understand. How is Eastern astrology different from sort of pop culture astrology as we know it in newspapers and magazines and even, you know, charts that we get read out here?
That's a good question. To be honest, when I was growing up, I didn't really respect Western astrology too much. And I think that's because it didn't seem very specific. Whenever I'd read anything, I wasn't sure about the background of the person writing it. Maybe it was good, maybe it was not, but it didn't really dive deep enough. Mm. When people come to me and they look at their charts, they want to know the deepest things in their heart. They don't want to know about their personality. They don't want to know what I'm going to predict for their future. You know, it's not a psychic reading with all respect to other people's professions, but they want to know, why have I always attracted the wrong type of men? Mm. Why have I not gotten it together in my career? Why have I suffered with this chronic health problem? Why can't I come to peace with my family situation? They want to know something very, very valuable to them. And for that, you need to look deeply into the consciousness. And that's influenced by the person's family lineage karma, which are thought forms and belief systems passed down through the generations. It's influenced by their consciousness and their most recent past life. It's influenced by what it is that their soul is supposed to learn in this life, their strengths and weaknesses from previous lives. It's very, very complicated, and it's a lot of factors together, and there are a lot of different charts. You know, when people start to study Jyotish or Vedic or Eastern astrology, they're often significantly overwhelmed because they don't understand how complex it is.
Right.
And that's a whole nother radio show, but it's a very, very, very deep thing. And people get extremely valuable answers. And then they also get mantras, practices that are going to work on their consciousness, their subtle body, their subconscious mind, and also what's being created in their life. And they're going to get specific ones for them that we know are going to work.
That makes a lot of sense. So Jyotish, Eastern astrology, and Vedic astrology, those are all synonyms. They're all essentially the same name, a different name for the same practice.
Absolutely.
So the Pioneer Valley has a huge yoga community out here. Can you briefly explain a little bit about how Vedic astrology fits into the Vedic philosophy, into the yoga asana practice, into the Vedas? Can you briefly kind of touch on that a little bit so people can kind of put your work into context with yoga?
So Vedic astrology is the astrology that's associated with the yogic system, or yoga is associated with the Vedic system. But if we take the tree where we have Ayurveda, mantra, meditation, yoga asana, pranayama. On that same tree, Jyotish or Vedic astrology is a branch. It's kind of the science of correctly mapping out your life.
Gotcha.
And you can take that perspective, and it's like a destiny. And then the more that you purify yourself with all of these practices, the pure expression you get of that destiny. So sometimes people are afraid, well, there may be something negative that I don't want to know. So I don't give death predictions or those types of information, but I do give honestly, you know, this is what's been going on and this is what's needed to correct it. So the focus is really on empowering people. And then you can take those practices with the mantras if people want. That's not something that's typically given with Jyotish or Vedic astrology readings. That's a separate background that I have that I've been able to combine. Because I always wanted, when I was younger and, you know, going through life, I didn't want to just know what was going on. I wanted to know how to correct it.
Absolutely. And like you said, it is very empowering to have the know-how and also a tool.
Absolutely. And the whole purpose of yoga on the deepest level is liberation. Hmm. So in order to go for liberation, we need to understand to a degree the karmic forces playing out in our life, because without bringing that consciousness to the day-to-day circumstances, any power, any peace of mind, any energy that people build up from their practices, they're going to continually lose.
Without the undercurrent strengthening with the mantras and other kind of practices and syncing up their vibrations.
Exactly. It's like if you put all of this time and energy and money into your yoga practice, your meditation practice, you know, whatever practices you're doing, people have invested themselves, but then you go back to a dysfunctional relationship, or, you know, you're absorbing people's energy when you're going to work, or you're constantly having health problems or whatever it is, then your practice energy is actually going to trying to correct those circumstances. It's not going towards your spiritual growth.
Hmm.
So we need to have consciousness. And my guru says that introspection is even more valuable than meditation. So if you could have someone look deep into your heart and your soul and your consciousness and tell you where you're getting tripped up, where the mistakes are coming from, that's incredibly valuable, because then you can avoid those mistakes and people make a lot of progress. So what I do when people come for the reading, I take their focus, because the charts are like encyclopedias of information. So I take what it is that they need. I go through some basic information, and then I answer their questions and give them practices and practical steps, and then say, go ahead for 40 days, which is the amount of time it takes in the subconscious mind to make a change. Work on this, and then come back, and we'll do the next layer. And we keep going until the situation is harmonized. I've helped people to find jobs, have babies, heal relationships, find their soulmate, you know, so many different things. And it's incredibly rewarding to see people make these really deep, beautiful changes.
Fabulous. So tell us a little bit about... You kind of gave us a little bit of an idea of what Jyotish astrology is, this kind of bird's eye view of your life, of these larger karmic and ancestral patterns, and using it as a roadmap for being able to understand how we're being tripped up, whether it's questions in our romantic lives, in our careers, in our health. So it's this kind of larger navigational chart for us to access. And the other side of what you do, or another part of what you do, is the mantra, is the corrections for figuring out where people are going wrong, and then offering this vibrational correction. And one thing that I think about sometimes is that, you know, in a lot of the Western culture around, very specifically around kind of the self-development work, there are what I understand as affirmations that people use as the word mantra, you know, to love yourself, you know, every day, in every way, I love myself, like these kind of things, these positive affirmations. How is the work that you're doing with mantra different than how this word mantra is sort of being thrown around and I don't mean that in a disparaging way as thrown around, but can you discuss a little bit about your definition of what is mantra more specifically?
I get that question a lot. And when people say on social media or in the day-to-day life, you know, my mantra is I am love or I am peace, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's the colloquial understanding. It's not the text from the Vedas, from the scriptures, what a mantra is. In the scriptures, the word mantra comes from manas and tra to set free, and manas is the mind. So you're freeing the mind, and the mantras are sets of Sanskrit words. And Sanskrit is a vibrational language. It's made up of a combination of the five elements, earth, air, fire, water, and ether. Mm. And each sound in the Sanskrit alphabet corresponds to different petals on the chakras. So when you're chanting a mantra in Sanskrit, you are putting a specific vibration that's working with the substratum of creation into your chakras, into your subtle body, into your subconscious mind, and into your life. So as you say the mantra Shanti, which means peace, you are planting seeds of peace in your life. Mm. You are becoming the vibration of peace, and anything that is not of peace is going to be pushed out of your life, because as you build up that vibration, other vibrations are burned off. It's like the chakras can be damaged, weakened, there can be residue in there because of thoughts, emotions, actions, ways we've made other people feel in previous lives. That comes back to us and influences our subtle body. So say, for example, somebody who steals, it's going to damage their first chakra. Their first chakra is made up of the earth element. So then they're going to have trouble maintaining that vibration in their life, which has to do with things on the physical plane, the earth plane, cars, money, home, family, karma, mental, emotional health. It's all coming from the first chakra. So when you chant a mantra, you essentially repair it. You're chanting something for the earth element, you're rebuilding that, and then it's building up that vibration, and then your external life is a reflection of what's going on in your subtle body. And then in addition to working on a very deep level, we also look at what were the original actions from the previous lives, or what is the spiritual ignorance that caused this type of problem. So, for example, if somebody has, say, fibromyalgia, which is a pain disorder, you know that there's been pain, a lot of pain from past lives. And that could come from a lot of different sources. But then it's not enough to chant the mantra. You also have to correct the mistake. So if that came from other people in the family lineage causing people pain, we need to do ancestral practices. If that came from, you know, causing people physical pain, you need to help people feel better. If it came from causing people mental, emotional pain, you need to uplift people's minds. So we have to see the action and the mantra.
So is, you know, I think that in the, you know, in Catholicism, it just reminds me a little bit of the, you know, when you make a mistake and you go to confessional and you say, you know, these are the things that I've sinned for, and then they offer you, you know, these Hail Marys, or, you know, I don't know, I'm not Catholic, but the idea, you know, of being able to offer confessional and then receiving these, you know, sort of things that you're supposed to clear out. Is it similar to that practice of Catholicism where you're kind of cleansing that, that lower vibration?
That's a good question. I'm not sure how to answer that because I did grow up with a Catholic side and then also with the agnostic side. So I'm not sure really how to compare it, but based off of the yogic system, there are laws of this universe, and just like gravity is a law, you know, how nature works has laws, law of cause and effect. There's when you put something out to the universe, whether it's a thought, an emotion, a word, or an action, or the way that you make other people feel, those actions are going to be subjected to certain laws within this realm. So then we can see objectively how have things gone out of harmony with nature and how can we put them back in. So the concrete steps are balancing the scales.
I like
and
that.
That's when people can shift. It's not enough to do the practices and uplift the mind state. You have to see also what the correction is, because on a deeper level, the example I gave is also going to teach people to learn a lot of compassion. So there's you take the kind of gross, dense manifestation of the symptom, and then you trace it back to spiritually what's going on, and then you correct the subtle body and you correct the karma, and then people have what they feel are miraculous healings.
I like that. So you mentioned previously that you had an agnostic, that you were raised agnostic as well as with some Catholicism. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into this work? And because it sounds like you had a different, that you were raised differently. So tell us a little bit about how you came to this.
Well, they say that all meditation is preparation for your consciousness at death, because your consciousness at death determines your base imprint or samskara for your next life. And when I was a child, I just heard mantras in my head, and I thought that these were thoughts. I didn't realize that this was not what maybe other people were experiencing, because this is what I consciously remember. You know, some of my first memories are of me having these thoughts.
Wow.
So as I would look out in my life, I would be chanting mantras, just experiencing life, not realizing that this is not what other people are doing, because I'm a child and I'm not talking about this to anyone. So I think it's normal.
That's so cool. So how old were you at that age that you remember that?
I remember being 4, because I remember chanting when I went to my grandfather's funeral.
Wow.
And I remember, you know, chanting on the playground. I remember chanting while playing sports. And I had, as a child, a near-death experience, because I had a lot of illness.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time in the hospital, and I, you know, saw other children die, and I remember looking around in elementary school and just feeling like people in some ways were wasting their life.
Wow.
And I didn't want to be like that, and I didn't realize until I was a little bit older that these were mantras and that other people weren't necessarily doing this. And because I was chanting these mantras, I feel that's why I attracted my mentor for mantra, and I learned a lot of mantras, and then I practiced, and then I had a vision of my guru. I ended up living with my guru, and over time, as I was doing mantras, millions and millions and millions of mantras in India, I became aware of the fact that there was a more efficient way to do that. So there's kind of a system where you want to start with Ganesha mantras, then you want to focus on karma removal, and then doing aspects for creation. But it took me many years of doing millions of mantras and not necessarily getting the results that I wanted to figure that out. And in the meantime, I was losing energy because I was repeating the same patterns, you know, of relationships, of health, of family dynamics. And then when I met my mentor for the Eastern astrology, he told me that I had done this in past lives and started teaching me again to kind of remind me, and then things just kind of flooded back. And when I started looking at the karma that I was going through and started working with the mantras from that perspective, that's when the floodgates opened and things started to drastically shift in my life.
How have you felt like things have shifted in your own life with this work? How has mantra and astrology benefited you personally?
Well, I've been able to overcome a lot of deep karma. For example, I had chronic health problems, including fibromyalgia, and these are very deeply rooted, and it took a lot of years, but I was able to reverse that karma. I saw a lot of things shift within my family. Actually, my father, when he passed away, it was on the 40th day of me chanting a mantra to clear family lineage karma, and there's a lot of stories that I could tell. I was able to heal deep patterns within my marriage. And I was also told when I was younger that I wouldn't be able to have children. And I have a healthy little baby girl now.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
She's super cute.
Yeah.
So how does one get mantras? How do you know? I know you kind of talked a little bit about that's part of why it's an attractive thing to get your chart read and be able to kind of take some of these shortcuts that you did the millions and millions of mantras and that you kind of learned how to do these systems a little bit more efficiently. So how do you pick the mantras? How do people know what the right mantra is for them?
So traditionally, people would go to a guru, which is an enlightened being, and they would receive a mantra, and that would be for liberation. So in that circumstance, the liberated being is agreeing to take on the person's karma until they've merged with God consciousness. Then, even within that context, when you go to ashrams or spiritual communities within India, people are doing other mantras. They're doing mantras for different celebrations, for different aspects of the divine, and kind of like a routine system like that. Sometimes it's health, sometimes it's wealth, and the different holidays give, you know, different focuses. And then people are also doing planetary remedies to help with what's called Prarabdha karma, and that's the karma for this lifetime. That's what really affects people's day-to-day reality. So you can go and you can just start doing mantras, but when you look specifically at the chart, you know that those are targeted, and you know what results to expect. Mm. So you can't say, okay, I'm going to do this and get this result, but you can say, we can keep working with the mantras until this result is achieved, because sometimes karmas are complex, sometimes there's different layers, and then you can also see if it's something that just has to be accepted because some karma is like a line in concrete, or you know, how to work around it, because a lot of things can also be moved. So by looking at the chart, the main chart, and all the subdivisional charts, you can say, all right, my focus right now is I want to attract my life partner. And so we look and we say, all right, is this the time period when the partner is supposed to come in? There are different options for soulmates sent from different karmic circumstances. And you can say, all right, which is the best choice for me for the life that I'm going to choose to have? You can look at, am I open to receive the partner? Have I let go of things from past relationships? Is there something that I've been brought up with my family that I need to shift? You know, there's a lot of different work so that you can align things, and then we can go in and basically do an evaluation. This is exactly what's going on, and this is what you need to do. And then, you know, I provide the support until the person has what it is that they need. So everybody picks where they want to start, or they ask, where do you think I should start? Or maybe they come into the session with an open mind and they just want to see what's there. So it really depends on the consciousness of the person, which is why I suggest three focuses for the first session so that I can make sure people have what it is they're looking for.
And what does an initial first session look like when somebody connects with you? What does that look like?
So first, someone will message me and I'll ask them, do you have your birth information, including the time, so I can make your charts? When are you typically available? Do you want to do it via FaceTime, phone, or Skype? And then once we coordinate those details, I'll start the session by going through some general information. So I'll have their questions if they have those in front of me. I'll go through general information. I'll go deeply into the specifics that they asked for. And then if they would like, I provide them with the practical steps and also the mantra instructions, as well as other practice instructions if they would like that, such as different breathing techniques or, you know, meditations, visualizations. And then for the mantras, I also provide them with recordings, and we problem solve based off of their time frame, how much practice they would like to do. I work with people who want to do 2 hours. I work with corporate clients where they're listening to recordings on airplanes or on the way to work. So it's not that people need to have hours of practice. They can say, I have 20 minutes a day, or I have this time period to listen to it. But we problem solve how it is that we can get the mantras and vibrations into their day-to-day life.
I like that. I like that a lot, because not everybody has the same level of time or commitment to the practice. And then when you set up these mantra sets, you essentially are doing them for a set number of days as well. There's a sequence that you said?
Correct. So I recommend that people work with the first round of mantras for 40 days, and then I'll work with them on cycles. And because the charts are like encyclopedias of information, every time we do a reading, we get more information, we look deeper, there are layers, and then there are also different aspects. So that could go on and on and on until someone is liberated, but it's basically a very deep reflection, and we can look back over the past 40 days and see, okay, this worked, this didn't work, these patterns came up, this is how we work through it. And people report that they feel better, their mind is more uplifted, they start to gain confidence because they see that things are shifting for them. And then all of a sudden they want to do mantras for all the different areas, because once people see that it works,
they want more of it.
They're going to want. Yeah. They want more.
That's cool. So we are going to do a little reading. and checking out one of my charts. And is there a particular chart that you are looking at today, or I'm very open to whatever you pull out for me to explore.
Okay, great. So I'm just going to zone in on what I see is most important.
Great.
So the first thing is, in March, you started a new time period. So there are these time periods called dasas, and it's when different karma is coming to the surface. So from March 6th of 2001 to March 6th of 2018, you were in your Mercury time period.
Okay.
And then on March 6th of this year, you switched into K2 time period. And
What is the Mercury time period versus the K2 time period?
So Mercury would have been your ruling planet, where different spiritual lessons associated with Mercury would have been coming up for you.
Okay.
And Mercury is in your seventh house, so that has a lot to do with relationships. And Mercury is... It's really hard to summarize it, but I'm going to do my best. There's the major period, and so the Mercury period, we have 17 years, and then there's the minor period. So we have the overall period, and then every planet, there are 9 heavenly bodies that we look at called grahas. In Sanskrit, we say planet to make it easier, but we being astrologers. So as the different sub-periods come up, things are also going to rotate. When you have a good overall major period, it's like the weather is good, and then, you know, as the sub-periods rotate, things can go up and down. But your Mercury is in your relationship house, and it's with Sun, which Sun represents the soul, the Father. Mercury and Sun together show that you have a lot of intelligence, you have a good business sense, and your relationships are also really influenced by how your father was. How, you know, not just in this life, but how he was as a soul in a past life. So your deep soul connection with the soul of your father and the role he played in this life is a huge influence for you for relationships. And during the Mercury period, you know, Mercury would have sent one option for you for a soulmate. And Mercury is really one of those planets that behaves differently depending on who he's with. Mm-hmm. So this would have given you intelligent partners, but on one level it would have been a little bit superficial because Mercury is a lot in the head.
Yeah.
So it's hard to have the balance also with the heart. And it's kind of like outside of the realm of emotions a little bit. And for you, you have deeper emotions because your moon, which is your consciousness or your mind, is with the other karmic node of the moon, Rahu, R-A-H-U. Rahu and K2 are new words for people. They're hard to explain quickly, but basically their shadow aspects, and everybody has influence in their chart, and depending on where they are in the chart, they impact someone's consciousness and life differently. So Rahu and Moon together means that your mind can be very expansive, you can have deep states of consciousness, you can have deep emotional states, you can feel emotions of other people. And you've also brought in trauma from past lives. So Rahu can give periods of time where you can feel confusion. Your mind can feel like a roller coaster. And this Rahu is also the rebel. So, and it rules over mantra and esoteric practices. So your mind is drawn towards the occult, drawn towards spiritual power, drawn towards things that are not mainstream of society, like anything that's revolutionary, green building, or, you know, just not the norm, but something different. And moon also represents the mother. So whenever I see one of the karmic nodes at the moon, with the moon itself, it means that your mom would have also had something going on mentally, emotionally, where her moods would have shifted. So when you faced your mother growing up, maybe she was in this mind state and then a different mind state and a different mind state. So emotionally, it wouldn't have been so much stability. And it also shows that because in your relationship chart, the karmic nodes are also a heavy influence. You have Moon, Rahu together as the ascendant, which is the main influence. It's over your consciousness all the time. It's the way that you see relationships. And then the karmic nodes of the Moon are always seven houses apart, so that puts K2 in the relationship house. And when this happens, it's like a polarization. And how you see the other person and what you say or do, and then how that person interprets it and how they see it, and then what they say or do coming back also gets distorted. So you tend to pick someone that in some ways is very different, and then communication can be a challenge, but it's not communication like, oh, let's go to a play at 7 p.m. It's the emotional communication or understanding.
That makes sense.
So K2, because you switched into the K2 time period, that means that now K2 being in your seventh house shows another major relationship is there for you.
I like that.
And this is a relationship that could be a life partner.
Could that also be a friendship, or does it look like it's more of a romantic thing?
So you'll have friendships with people who are heavily influenced by K2. You know, I myself have a K2 over my ascendant, so hence our friendship.
But, yeah, absolutely. We've known each other for like 10 years, so that's that definitely will be an influencing factor for sure.
Yeah. But then also, at this time, specifically, a romantic partner is coming in.
Cool.
And this is a partner that I think is someone that's going to be a good match for you with the way that you are, because you have such a strong influence of Rahu. It's like Rahu likes the unconventional. So you want someone that K2 is sensitive, aware, it's the planet that rules over yoga and spirituality, it's a liberating force. So, you know, a romantic relationship for you is going to bring you a lot of spiritual growth. It's going to bring you, you know, in a different direction spiritually. It's going to also have someone that can keep up with your spiritual changes, because K2 is the planet of deep spiritual change. It's the liberating planet. So it's not just someone that you meet and then you have, you know, important qualities that you guys share and then you have your plan for your life, but it's someone that's going to be able to adapt as you adapt.
That is definitely an important feature in a future partner of mine for sure, because that's, yeah, I think I'm always working on my own personal development and clearing out a lot of my spiritual nonsense and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's for sure very important in a partnership of mine.
And the partnership is going to be a lot about breaking patterns that you cultivated with the dynamic growing up with your mom. So your relationships are, you see through that dynamic with your mother. So healing anything with your mother is really important. And that doesn't mean necessarily in person. It just means internally, you know, to make peace with patterns and shift belief systems. And it's not just your mother. It's your mother's mother, your mother's mother's mother. It's things that were passed down. It's generational patterns. So some people are more influenced by the family lineage karma or the belief systems and actually things that we experience than other people. And yours is a pretty heavy influence for you for relationships from both sides. It's more the family lineage patterns coming from your mom and then more of the karma, the patterns you've had specifically with the soul of your father who you've had dynamics with in previous lives.
Hmm. So I know these typically your readings go on for an hour or for 90 minutes, so you can really do some serious deep dives. That was sort of just a little sampler for anyone out there listening who kind of wants to get a little taste of what my chart looks like. But I would highly recommend going and checking out Gowrie's work, because I think that you're super knowledgeable and really talented. And, you know, having a little bit of that perspective, a little bit of that reflection, and then also having the option of the mantras to come in and build up your vibrational healing around that work is a really beautiful way to feel better and have all these areas of your life that, you know, have been experiencing a little bit of friction to smooth out, and offering some grace in that direction. So thank you so much, Gowrie, for sharing a little bit about with my chart. And everybody out there for holding that space with me as well. If you are interested in checking out her work, please check out GowriesMantraMeditation.com, and that's GauriesMantraMeditation.com. GauriesMantraMeditation.com. So thanks so much again, Gowrie, for coming on and talking about what you do. And is there anything else that you wanted to throw out there quickly before we wrap up for the evening?
Yes, if anyone runs any yoga trainings or owns some type of yoga space or healing center, and you would like for me to come and teach mantras at your training or as a workshop or do pujas or homas, which are karma clearing ceremonies with involving a lot of mantra, please contact me so that I can come and offer that to your students.
Yes, and there's a lot of yoga trainings around here, so you know, bringing those good vibes and those good energies into the spaces around here would be lovely. So, and you've been listening to Energy Matters. Take care, everyone.